my name is Bo Johnson. I'm here at Within the Margins, and I'm here today with Sandaria Fay. She is the co-founder of Cambilio Writers Group, Fiction Writers, I'm sorry, and she is also the author of the upcoming novel, Mourner's Bench. Can you tell me a little bit about the novel?
Yes, I can, Paul. The novel is set in 1964 and 65 in rural Arkansas. It's a coming-of-age story, and during the height of the Civil Rights Movement, because in 1964, the Voters' Rights Act was approved, and I got those backwards. 1965, President Johnson signed into law the Civil Rights Act, and in 1965, it was the Voters' Rights Act. And so it takes place primarily during those two summers. And I think I said it's a coming-of-age story. It's in rural Arkansas, in the Delta of Arkansas. And it's just opposed church against state, really. So you have these very religious African-American community who believes in what they do in their church. They're guided by the church. And they don't want integration. And then you have Sarah's mother, Esther, who returns to town. And around the same times, you have three organizers for SNCC who comes to town to integrate the businesses and the schools in that town. And that causes some conflict between church and state.
So going to religion for a moment, one of the interesting things that sort of came up to me from the book was that there is this really sort of critique of Christianity that runs rampant throughout, I would say critique. I mean, she's giving me this very strange face that seems surprised, but it seems like a really harsh critique of Christianity, particularly juxtaposed with perhaps a more gentle hand towards the Nation of Islam, and that's not something that you see typically within contemporary African-American fiction or any kind of representation of the Civil Rights Movement. Can you speak on that a little?
Well, the Nation of Islam, the role that the Nation of Islam plays in this novel, was a surprise to me. I've always been interested in the nation and their beliefs and their philosophy. I think that maybe the critique may be more on the Christianity side is because I grew up as a Christian. My knowledge of Christianity is more in depth than the one that I have about the Nation of Islam. But I did do research for both of them. But because the family and also the town is that their beliefs are in Christianity. And I have one of the philosophies when I grew up was that you do not question the Bible and you do not question God. And so I think the critique that maybe Poe sees in this is the fact that Sarah, my narrator, is questioning all of that. And she also questions the Nation of Islam, but she loves her uncle so much, who is a member of the nation, that that's probably why she has a lesser critique of that than she does Christianity.
Well, actually, what I would say is that it's not even Sarah that I see the critique coming from. It's actually sort of like this seemingly writer's presence that exists within the novel that says, okay, so the Christians, and I think it's Reverend
Jefferson, I believe.
Perhaps. I'm mm-hmm. drawing a blank. I apologize. Who is essentially saying to fight back against racism, to fight back against white supremacy, essentially is going to lead you to hell. It leads you to the devil. And I think that's the sort of critique that I'm talking about, that that's a kind of rampant idea that sort of like Christianity teaches you to be docile, to behave. That's what I'm getting from your book. And so do you not see that? Do you seem to disagree with this?
I do agree with that. That I'm not necessarily docile, but if you read about the 60s, not that we could remember them, but if you read about the 60s, you would see where Christianity at that time, I mean, a lot of people thought that Martin Luther King was a rebel rouser. And that he was creating conflict. So I think it was more, instead of being docile about this, I think it lends itself more to protecting yourself from the powers that be and from being killed or raped or whatever may be able to hung. that could happen to you in the South during those times. And so I see where Reverend Jefferson may come off in the way that Poe described him, but I think it was more of a protection mechanism, more so than a Christian philosophy.
Well, let me push back on that for a second, because I don't disagree with you that sort of from Sarah's grandmother and Sarah's great-grandmother, that certainly seems to be part of it. But I think from the actual church, mm-hmm. it appears to be saying, like, again, you're going to go to hell. This is not like a sort of, this is not equivocating at all. This is like, you're going to go to hell if you disobey the sort of like the white man's law. And in fact, you do have the motion, the point in the book where it also says like her grandmother is upset by the notion that Jesus could be colored. So it's like, so we can't like, you can't dismiss out of hand this notion that there's something else going on here within your own book.
I have to agree with that. But also I have to also say that in the book, you're pretty much going to hell for everything.
Good point.
So
fair
it's
point.
Not.
It's fair.
It's not just that.
We'll
I mean,
get to that in a second.
I think that what I did write about in the book was that in this particular and just in the book that whatever Sarah did, that she was going to go to hell for it. Whether it was question God, whether it was run across the pulpit, whether it was talk back to your mother. This family parented. By the Bible. This is what they did, and that's how strong that they were steeped in their religious beliefs. And so when Esther actually had Sarah out of wedlock, it was an embarrassment to the family and to the church and to the community that attended that church. So so these were beliefs, and I think that one of the things that I wanted to do in the book was generally have Sarah question those beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that's where that comes from, I believe. Hopefully that answers a little better.
Sure, and I think I'm going to use that to sort of jump off into another point, if you don't mind. So as part of sort of like the Christian dogma, and I think in some instances you can't deny that the book is dogmatic or says that Christianity is rather dogmatic. I think that's, in fact, what you were just saying. There's also a lot of times this connection to this kind of subversion, maybe not subversion is not the right word that I'm looking for, but suppression of women. And I think what you've done in the book, though, is sort of like to have this book generally about this fourth generation of women and their sort of their both acceptance and their challenging of Christian norms sort of raises these interesting questions about what you sort of see as the place of women within Christianity, or perhaps more broadly, sort of the relationship with women and the civil rights movement, and also how Christianity relates to those things. Can you speak a bit more on that?
What I was trying to do with the book was show that by 1964, the role of women, particular in this particular town of Mabee, Arkansas, was beginning to change. I try to show that with Esther's character and who is an actual character in the book, who's a public figure, is in Miss Carrie Dearworth, who actually was leading the civil rights movement in Arkansas and Mabee, Arkansas. And so, therefore, I try to show that by Sarah questioning everything. I tried to show it with Esther's leadership, and I tried to show it in the church with Miss Orby. Who was a preacher, but she wasn't allowed the same privileges as the male preachers. And so I tried to show it through Sarah's great-grandmother's actions when she's not a person that attends church very often, but when Miss Orby was going to preach, this was an occasion for her to put on panties and bra and get dressed and go to church to support her. So sometimes... As it's been known in the South to be something that women do, is maybe not be directly active, but be active in their own way, more active silently almost, but still make a statement.
So one of the things, and to sort of get back to Esther for a moment, is that you have created in Esther this very interesting character who sort of does not fit your typical model of sort of like either the civil rights rebel rouser, as you called Martin Luther King, or in this other instance, like this person who is docile and accepting of her position in life, she wants to sort of fight these sort of like systemic forces. And I think she doesn't necessarily call them systemic, but she certainly describes them as systemic. So can you talk about sort of the process of sort of creating Esther, who in one particular moment that sort of sticks out to me says that her problem with integration is that it really should be separate and equal, and that has never really been done before. So she's actually constructing this sort of new way of thinking about it. It's not typical of typical civil rights stories, particularly from written in the contemporary moment.
Well, Esther to me is probably my most interesting character. That's probably maybe what Poe is saying. And she was the last character that whose voice I heard who began to let me know who she was and the type of person she was. And she surprised me because she had come from this docile environment where she was supposed to obey the Bible and obey our elders and all of the things that we've been taught to do. But Esther had gone away believing that she had received an art scholarship, and that wasn't the case when she arrived to Chicago. But instead of running back home, she became our own person, and she joined up with a feminist group, learned about feminism, learned about civil rights, became an artist. And when Miss Carrie Dearworth asked her to come back to lead the grassroots part of the civil rights movement there in our own hometown, she willingly did so. And so, but her character, based on the fact that she had gone away, I thought that she should come back totally different. Mm-hmm. And also not be someone that could blend into the community, somebody who set, who was very much apart from the community, which she was when she left, but she tried to blend. So this time she didn't try. She wanted to stand out. She brought back styles, dress, and everything that she had learned in Chicago. And she didn't want to be have rules and regulations placed upon her that she wasn't, you know, able, like she had before.
So one of the interesting things, since you brought that up, is one of the most interesting things about this particular novel is that it's relevant to today is very sort of profound and it's very striking. And one of those is that this sort of this intersection between race and gender that is prolific throughout, that it sort of comes up with Sarah and maybe most prominently in some ways with Esther, who, like you said, sort of takes on these feminist issues while also taking on these issues of racism and systemic oppressions of that nature. So how do you see this, if you see this at all, as a sort of active participant in a larger discussion in regards to race and gender?
I see some of the similar questions coming up about race and gender. And as you mentioned, some of the questions are coming up again about separate but equal. Mm-hmm. Some questions are coming up whether integration was the right thing to do or should we have continued it in a different way. Some people believe that integration just stopped in the 1960s, and we haven't arrived yet. So I don't know what the answer is for that, you know. But I think that if I could say that the 60s relate to what's going on in the world today, is that we're asking those questions again. We're asking the questions that they ask in the 60s, and this time, hopefully, we will answer them in ways that we can continue to grow as a race and get rid of some of the systemic oppressive ways that we still are forced into today.
So I'll save my big question for my last question. Do you think that's at all possible? Do you think that considering what we saw in the 60s and how we've seen variations and iterations of that continue on to this very moment, do you think that it's possible to really deal with these issues? Have we sort of, was it even possible in the 60s, or were people fooling themselves then? Basically what I'm asking, is there any hope to be found?
Oh, well, we've had this conversation before.
Privately, yes.
Yes, but we don't have, I think I just have like a couple of seconds to answer this.
I know. Sorry,
I'm a very hopeful person. I think about it, I think in both ways. On some days, I think there is no hope, but I'm a hopeful person, and I have to believe that there is hope. I think at the end of the novel, even with Sarah, there's hope. But how that hope will manifest itself, I really don't know. I hope that we will continue to grow. I wish that we could, something would happen and we could grow by leaps and bounds. But yes, the answer to your question is yes. I do believe that there's hope. And I hope that we just don't grow and stop. I hope that the growth is continuous.
Okay, and I think that'll be all for today. But before we go officially, give a plug for your book, say where we can buy it, and give any sort of other information that you think might be relevant to it.
Okay, so Mourner's Bench can be purchased at any, it's available at any of your booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any independent bookseller. It's being published by the University of Arkansas Press. It comes out September 1st. And please purchase. I think you will find this interesting. Invite me out to speak to your group if you love this conversation that Poe and I've had and would like to continue it.
All right, so that'll be it for today. My name is Poe Johnson for Within the Margins. Thank you and have a wonderful day.